Well, as somebody's already mentioned, I did get back this week from a very long bike ride, and I do want to thank you for your support. I met my fundraising target, and the whole event has raised $230,000. So everybody got there safely, and some people got there more quickly than others. So, although we did all arrive together. Although a funny thing happened, this isn't my sermon notes, but there was this guy who was slower than me riding, which was great. In one sense, that I didn't feel bad, but unfortunately, when he came to some really big hills, he'd just hop in the car, and that made me the slowest rider. So going up the hills, and which wasn't always great. But so as the 10 days wore on, he hopped in the car more and more as the mountains got bigger. And so he probably only rode 300 or 400 kilometres, and instead of the 1,400. So we're coming into the MCG, finishing at the MCG, and we're riding in pairs, right? A long row of pairs. And the lead riders, who were the A riders, when we got to the MCG, they turned the wrong way. And so everybody's turning the car behind us, saying, turn right, turn right, turn right. So they turned right, and this guy did a Stephen Bradbury. So this guy, who had only ridden 300 or 400 kilometres, crossed the line first. So it was fairly impressive. What was great about the ride, actually, was that I got to meet all sorts of people, and they were just kind of connections of connections. Some people connected to some of the sponsoring companies. Some had just heard about the ride and just wanted the physical challenge. And one of the girls who was riding, I was in the B riders. So the A riders were very good. They rode very fast. And then there was the B riders, and I was one of those. And one of the girls, who was herself a good rider, actually, was a girl called Jennifer. And she was from Cessnock. She's a lawyer. And she was a, you know, an outgoing person. She was fun to be around. But on the very last night, we had this like a farewell dinner, kind of wrap up of the whole event. We showed some videos and shared some stories, and she, unscripted, she just hopped up and said, I just want to say something about the Salvation Army. And she said, I'm 37 years old, and she said 30 of those years have been happy ones, but she said the first seven were not. She said, both my parents were heroin addicts, and my sister, and her sister happened to be there that night to come to support her. She said, my sister and I lived hand-to-mouth existence. We were often hungry, starving, neglected, and uncared for. And she said, I remember when Mum used to kind of get herself looking reasonably respectable, and she would go to the Salvation Army. And she would ask them for a voucher, and they would always give her a substantial voucher of $50 or something. And she said it was like Christmas, because we could take it down to the shops and we could buy something to eat. And she said, I remember every time we got those vouchers. Now, her story changed when she was seven. Her dad, for the second time, overdosed. And when he came to, he saw the distress on his daughter's face, and he said, I've got to get myself clean. And he did get himself clean. And he's been clean for 30 years, and he's looked after both his children. Her mother, unfortunately, is still an addict. And I was thinking about Jennifer, thinking about her story, and it was very moving when she shared this, because none of us had known this, right? And so she wanted to give back to the Salvation Army. That's why she wanted to go on the ride to raise funds for them. And I thought about Jennifer, and I thought, what did she want? What did she really want? When this little child, what did she want? What did she really need? What is it that each of us wants? You know, our basic wants, the deepest desires of our heart, or not even desires, needs. What do we want as Christian people? Now we could want many things. We could want many complex things. As we were going up mountains, and they were mountains, I was wishing that I was 15 kilos lighter. Or at least seven would have been a help. The laws of physics, you know, accelerating against gravity, it was hard work. What are the things that you and I want? Well, we might want gifts. We want more talents. We want a better intellect. We might want certainty in our life. We might want understanding or knowledge. We might want a glimpse of our future to know what lies ahead. And the list is probably a long one. If you've studied psychology at any level, if you've ever done a Psychology 101, you will have met Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's a kind of famous matrix. And it talks about the levels of needs that we have as human beings. And at the bottom level, it's a pyramid actually, and at the bottom level, these basic needs, the things that we absolutely must have, and they are for food and water and rest and security and safety. And these are our basic needs, the basic needs that we want. So when we say, when it all boils down to it, what I really want is rest and safety and security and sustenance. And I think this psalm we've read today that Rachel read for us is a what do you really want psalm. I think it answers that question in a very fundamental way. So Psalm 131 is one of what are called psalms of ascent. So if you were to look at the psalms from 120 to 134, they all bear this title, a psalm of ascent. And we think that they were the psalms that people used when they were ascending to Jerusalem. Jerusalem is high on a hill. And on an annual pilgrimage, or perhaps a once every few years pilgrimage to Jerusalem, that these psalms would be sung or recited. And if you look at these psalms, you'll see that most of them are actually quite short, just like the psalm we read today. And often they talk about family, they talk about relationships, they talk about the need of God. They talk about this longing for peace and for trust. So this was a psalm of ascent, and I think it's a jewel, like it's one of the shortest chapters in the whole Bible. And I think it's a picture of our basic need, that what do you really want question. It's a reminder for us. Now the other thing is, of course, that it's also an unusual and lovely feminine image of God. It's really an image of God as mother, as well as an image of our relationship with God. When I was thinking about this sermon, because I have preached for a few Mother's Day, because what happens is we agreed that I'd always preach on Mother's Day and Sharon would always preach on Father's Day. So I've done a few Mother's Day sermons. And so I was thinking, what can I say today? And I was thinking about that song that I used to sing when I was a kid, and it was on at Mother's Day or dedications, when the mothers of Salem, their children brought to Jesus, the something disciples drove them back and bade them depart. So some of you who are older than me will know that song. And I thought, well, I'll look that Bible passage up. And I looked up that passage in Mark, and unfortunately it doesn't mention Salem and it doesn't mention that they were mothers. It just says that there was people who were bringing children to Jesus. However, in that story, and it's in Mark's Gospel, it's in Mark chapter 10, we see children being brought to Jesus by people, probably mothers, at least lots of them were mothers. The disciples say, no, take the kids away, he's busy. And Jesus says, stop, let the children come to me. And Mark tells us he took them in his arms and he placed his hands on them and blessed them. And that's a mothering image, isn't it? This image of Jesus. And it's the same one that we have in this psalm, like a weaned child on its mother's breast. Well, why a weaned child? What does that mean? Well, it's a child that's not there for food. It's a child who's just sitting there because I want to sit there. I want to sit on my mum's lap. And it was the most safe and secure place in the world. He took the children in his arms, placed his hands on them and blessed them. And I wonder if those children remembered it. Probably not. We don't remember memories from when we're two or three. I guess the mothers remembered, and those who followed Jesus' story would have remembered that the Messiah had blessed their children. And in fact, it even goes deeper than that. In Psalm 131, it's not just a maternal image. A straightforward translation of verse 2 means that the psalm was probably written by a woman. A straightforward translation says, my soul is like the weaned child that is with me. And I wonder if it was one of those creative moments as they're on the pilgrimage to Jerusalem, and so let's say Rachel, that's a good biblical name. So Rachel is sitting there with all the other families, and she actually says these words. She actually says, "My heart is not proud, my eyes are not haughty. I do not concern myself with great matters or things too wonderful to me, but I have calmed and quieted myself. I'm like a weaned child with its mother, like a weaned child, I am content." I wonder if they said, "Rachel, that's beautiful. Say it again." And she did, and they remembered it. It became a song that they wrote down and said on their ascent. Perhaps it was more believable because it came from a woman. I don't know if you saw the results of the survey this week. Do you know who the most trusted politician in Australia is? Jacinda Ardern. The most trusted politician in Australia is Jacinda Ardern by a very big margin. By a very big margin. The next three are all women, Penny and Julie and Tanya. So perhaps we should trust the word of a woman here. So what does this psalm have to say to us? This picture of this weaned child who doesn't need its mum for food. Perhaps you remember that when you were a kid, when you just wanted to sit on your mum's lap. Not because you needed anything, just because it was great to sit on your mum's lap, just because you could. Now, I know for some of you that was a long time ago. For me, that was in the 60s, all right? For some of you, it was even further back than that, the 50s or the 40s, perhaps. I was hoping that Hazel was here, and you know, that would have been in the 20s for her. So anyway, if you can remember that far back, can you remember that feeling of sitting on your mum's lap? So this psalm is an image and a reminder about our deep need for security, our need for comfort, our need for love. And sometimes we need life to be simple. Sometimes we just need life to be simple because life is complex. Life is hard. Life is uncertain, and we just need it to be simple. And we need to step aside from the busyness of our lives. We need to step aside from the busyness of our world and recapture this sense of being with God, of just being with God and being secure. As human beings, we are storied people. And that means we have stories that help us make sense of the world and sense of ourselves. And we have these deep narratives in our hearts, and they're created out of our cultural heritage, they're created out of our family heritage, they're created out of our life experience. And at a deep level, they drive our sense of self, our sense of our place in the world. They drive our behaviours and our self-understandings. We need these stories. They shape our hopes and our dreams and our longings. But often these narratives about who we are and our place in the world and what we should be doing and expectations around us, they're often distorted, sometimes affected by sin. And sometimes it's not our sin. Sometimes it's by the sins of others. Sometimes we have been hurt and wounded. Sometimes love has been withheld from us, love that we deserved. Sometimes there has been hurts done to us. And these things limit us and constrain us. And Psalm 131 reminds us that being a Christian is essentially simple. It's not about what you know. It's not about what you can explain. It's not about what you can defend. It's not about what you do. Being a Christian is about loving and trusting God and being held by Him in infinite love. Sometimes they talk in life about life and things that we do move from the simple to the complex to the simple. I first encountered this when I was talking about preaching, and they said preaching's one of those tasks that is simple, then complex, then simple. So when you're young, you think preaching is simple, right? And they say, you know, preach a sermon. You say, sure, anybody can do that. I've heard a lot of them, you know. And you just have to have 3 points. And I do remember my first sermon that I ever preached on a Songster weekend at Albion. I didn't even use the Bible. I just used a song by Albert Osborne. First to know thee, then to love thee, then to see thee as thou art. Because I knew a sermon had to have 3 points. That's what everybody said. Then I went to college and I studied preaching. It suddenly became complex. And it took hours and hours to actually prepare sermons. And now the older I get, the more simple it is. And you find something to say. Lots of tasks are like that. Lots of tasks are like that. Running, simple. All right, when you're a kid, you ran. Actually, running's not quite so simple. I did cross the road the other day and I tried to run, and it didn't feel good, and I don't think it looked good. All that aside, let's take running. Simple, complex, simple. Say that you're a runner, right? And running's simple. When you're a kid, you ran all the time, and then you go to little athletics and they tell you, no, well, you've got to change this, you've got to change this, you've got to drive with your own, you know, lift your knees, or you know, do stand up straight or whatever it is, and your training becomes more complex. But then eventually it becomes simple and you run like Usain Bolt, or think you run like Usain Bolt. See, when you're 8 or when you're 5, life is relatively straightforward. People looked after you. Your mum looked after you, normally. Your mum made your decisions for you. But kind of as you got older, you got to the end of primary school, you started to have to make some choices. What subjects do you want to do at school? What do you want to be when you grow up? What career do you want? What about relationships? What about faith? There's all sorts of choices. You know, will I be a vegan or a piscatorian? What are the challenges I will face in life, big and small? Who am I? Am I a good person? A piscatorian, by the way, is someone who doesn't eat meat but they eat fish. You all knew that, didn't you? Yeah. Oh, okay. And then we discover that it's all these parts of our lives that are outside of our control. And there are joys and tragedies and they baffle us and they thwart us and they limit us. And in essence, this psalm says stop. God says stop. At the end of the day, they will never matter most. When all is said and done, that is, when our words have run dry and our actions are exhausted, God is still God. And he says, come to me, be with me, and know my love. God is love. He holds us as a loving mother would, secure, loved, and known. And then our faith becomes simple. And we ask of God, primarily, the gift of his presence. That is all we want. Be with me, God. Help me to know you, God, like a weaned child on its mother's breast. Someone once said that there's really only two prayers. We pray, help me, help me, help me. Or we pray, thank you, thank you, thank you. But I think we need a deeper prayer than that. Give me the gift of your presence. Give me the gift of your presence. That's our primary need, you see. That's at the bottom of the pyramid of needs. I want the gift of your presence, God. I want to feel your arms around me. And that is enough. That is more than enough. Oh God, when the learned cease their arguing, when the preachers fall silent, when our leaders stop urging us to do more, your presence, Lord, is sufficient. Your presence is all I need. What did Jennifer long for as a 7-year-old girl? What did she long for really? She longed for home. She longed for home. To be able to say, I am safe, I am secure. This is a very personal psalm, a psalm to the God who carries us in our arms. May each of us know today that our God carries us in unfailing, infinite love every moment of our lives. I want us to sing a little chorus that if you've grown up in the Salvation Army, you'll know well. It's just got a slightly different time signature. So I'm going to ask Zoe just to sing it the first time through for us. And as we sing this song, just pray that prayer. Lord, let me know your presence. That's it. Lord, let me know your presence. Let me rest in you. Let's sing this prayer together as we come before him.